Shalom Aleichem, sweetest friends. This year should be special schus lili nishmas Maran Hagaon Rabbi Yosef Dov and Rav Moshe Halevi Soloveitchik l'regel ha-yuletide. We'll learn a piece of Torah from him based on the records of a Talmud. Tanu Rabbanon, Psachim 6a. Nachu shenichnas lachatzer shel Yisrael b'tzeko b'yoda in zok levar fkidu etzel zok levar yichel lo bayis in zok levar. That if a guy goes into the courtyard of a Jew and he's holding his dough, he doesn't have to burn it. But if he gives it to the Jew as a pikadon, he does have to burn it. The Jew has to burn it. And if he sets aside a house for him, he doesn't have to burn it. Rashi explains shefkidu etzel. In other words, the Jew is makabel achrayis. The Jew is makabel achrayis, then he is responsible for it. He has to burn it. Yichad loy bayis, but if he sets aside a house or a room for him, then he doesn't have to burn it. Kilo kiblu alav ela amar le'arei bayis l'fenech anach bachas min azav yasein zok levar. In other words, he says you could take a spot in the house and put it there, but he wasn't makabel achrayis, and therefore he doesn't have to burn the chometz. Toisus yichad loy bayis is taman Rashi v'kotshel hari. Mar yichad fi lo'echid nami. If he wasn't makabel achrayis, why does it have to be that he set aside a house for him? He set aside place in the house. He didn't set aside place in the house. V'achinami masik b'samuch l'meimer d'schiris kanya. And that's also what we see in the Gemara. Weiter in the sugya, is this to say that schiris is kanya? In other words, later on in the sugya, we see that the reason Yichad Lo Bayis works and he doesn't have to mevar the chometz is because schiris is kaina. Because by being miyachid lo bayis, he was renting out that area, and memela the Jew doesn't have to burn the chometz. So Tosis' problem is, but if the Jew wasn't makabel achrayis, why does he have to say schiris kanya? Or vayter the sugya says la maskana. That Yatz is Hashem or Matzu biyatra, even if Schiris isn't kaina, but it's not Matzu biyadu, it's not Matzu biyad the Jew, it's not for the Jew's use, it's for the guy's use. So what do you have to say that for? It wasn't Makabal Achrayis. And therefore it's Chametz Shel Acherim. And it's like he came into your house with his own bread, and Chumbaya. So again, we have Rashi who says that. It's talking about where he wasn't Yichad Lo Bayis, he wasn't Makabel Achrayis. And we said if he wasn't Tosas, he wasn't Makabel Achrayis. And why does the Gemara have to say there's Schiris Kanya, that he's Koinen Al Yedei Schiris, or because he's not Matzu Biyad Yisrael, he wasn't Makabel Achrayis, that must speak. You don't have to come on to what the Gemara's whole, the Gemara's Svar of Yichad Lo Bayis, or of Schiris Kanya, or Yatzes Hashem or Matzu Biyadcha. Just the fact that he wasn't makabel achrayis should be enough. Ayin b'Ramban, and what Rashi writes at the beginning of the Masechta, al sherotze rav lefarish tach b'ayis adina dekatani. Klomer efkidu etzloi, stam, zokuk levar, dechayiv b'achru yusai, midin shar mechinam. Amar le harei b'ayis lefanecha, Eno zok levar ki de ismar perek azov de besa kamecha eno loy sham rechinam loy sham resocher. In other words, what the Ramban means is, and we see this even more in the Ran, is that we're talking about here where he would makabel achrayus, he was makabel shmira bistama, the minestam he is a din of sham rechinam. Which is miyachid abayis, since chiris kanya and the chomitz is Bebeis Hamafkid. So it's like he says to him, the house is in front of you, and there's no Kabbalah Sachrayas. In other words, the Yichid Lo Bayis, setting aside place in his house, is a proof that he wasn't a Kabbalah Sachrayas. And when the Gemara asks, is that to say that Schiris Kanya? Is that to say that he's Kona with Schiris? Is because it's like he says to him, Habesi Kamach, my house is in front of you. There's no Kabbalah Sachrayas. You can just place it where you want. Because if Schiris wasn't Koine, then it would be like Stam Shmira. That he'd be that he'd have a din of a shem rechina. So again, we're talking here about where he was mekabel shmira b'stam, and therefore he has a din of a shem rechina, unless he was miyachid bayis. And the miyachid bayis is the chokha that he wasn't mekabel shmira. That's what he says. Klamer fkidu etzlo stam zok levar y dechay vachem vizim shem rechina. If he was mafkid by him stam, then he has to be mavar because he's mechayv b'achrayas midin shem rechina. But if he says harei abayis lefanecha, he doesn't have to burn it. Because he's saying, my house is in front of you. I'm not a shomer. So that's the perush of the Ramban. The Ran that's why you have to come on to Yichid Lo Bayis. The Yichid Lo Bayis is a Hechocho that he wasn't Makabal Achrayas, because Stami he wasn't Makabal Achrayas. Yichid Lo Bayis says, no, my house is in front of you, do what you want, place it wherever you want, it's not my problem, it's your problem. I'm not a Shem Rechinim, I'm not a Shem Rechocho, like we see in the Gemara, when he says, Abesi Kamach, my house is in front of you. So the Kasha on the Perish of the Ramban is that Taisim Bav Metzia, Pebeis Amit Beis, says that according to Rashi, that day you have to burn the Pikdonis of a Goy when he's Makabal Achrayas, is Dafkun is Makabal Achrayas to Einsin. And Lachor, it so is Meforish and Rashi later on, 31b. And if so, it's difficult to explain like the Ramban, that Kol Bikodin Bistam Hu Zakak Levar Ki Avishar Mechina. Because if your Stam Pikodin is not, it's not Achrayas Einsin. And according to Rashi, it's only if there's a chrayas oinsin, only you're responsible even for onus. That's the only time you have to burn it. And according to the Ramban, as the Ramban has Rashi, any pikadon bistama hu zakuk levar, because it's a shem rechina. According to Rashi, it's not like that. Bistama, you don't have to burn it because you're not makabel achrayas oinsin. Another kash is ain't shmira la'akum. So he's talking about a goy. By a goy, there's no kabbalah sacharayis without an explicit kabbalah with a kinyan. So how can the Ramban say that pistami is makabbalah, he's zakuk levar because he's chayv b'acharayis midin shem rechina? By a goy, you need an explicit kabbalah sacharayis. And also we have to understand why the Gemara has to say the heter of Yichid Lo Bayis from Lo Yimatze. And there's a shakel b'tari, yischiris kanya, yischiris not kanya. It's b'chal not as chametz. The Gemara's conclusion is that it says Lo Yimatze. Why do you have to come on to that, Bechla? Like we saw before in Tosis also. What do you have to come on to that for? Matzah b'yadcha, matzah b'yadcha. He was miyachid b'ayis, he wasn't makabel achrayis. Zeh, zeh maspik lanu. Also, Rashi has a lashon of Lo kiblu alav. Rashi's lashon is when he was miyachid bayis, it's effective because lo kiblu alav. He wasn't makabel upon himself. Rashi didn't have to say lo kiblu alav. Rashi could have just said yichid lo bayis is effective. He's giving it over to the guy. He's saying, you put it wherever you want. It's not my problem. Why is Rashi emphasizing lo kiblu alav? So it would appear that the cheat of Rashi is that by any chametz that's birshus Yisrael, the Yisrael is over, even if it belongs to a guy. Any chametz that's Birshus Yisrael, the Yisrael is over, even if it belongs to a guy. And the whole miut, the exclusion of a chametz of a guy, is dafka in an instance where the guy enters the courtyard of the Jew and he's holding on to his dough. And this chametz, therefore, is in the property of the Jew, shelo bilshus, without permission. But if chametz is with the Jew bilshus, that is enough to be over on Bal Yimatzeh. That's called matzui biyatcha. And only there, mahani yichid lo bayis. Yichid lo bayis is effective. In other words, if it's birshus, it's no good. But yichid lo bayis makes it okay. Because since the chametz is in a place that's special for the goy, there's a special miut of lo yimotze that it's not considered matzei biyadcha. That's the miut of yichid lo bayis. Yichid lo bayis is okay because it's eino matzei biyadcha. That's the miut. Because he's saying it's your special place. But if he was a mekabel achrayus, it's like his own. There yichid lo bayis doesn't help. Because chametz shekibel achrayus havi kididei. And chametz didei gam b'yichid lo bayis oivrim alav. It's always Birshus Yisrael. Because if it's his, the yichid lo bayis is in hafkat. It's still like it's in his rishus. And that's why according to Rashi, you need a special miut of yichid. Of Yichid Lo Bayis, he set aside a place in the house. And it's not enough to have the miut of Shelcha Yitaro V'taro Shelecheirim. You're allowed to have the chametz of others. Because that's only if the chametz, if the guy's chametz is in the Jew's rishus without permission, it's in the Jew's property without permission. But if the Jew gives him permission, then only Yichid Lo Bayis helps. That's why Rashi says that it's Yichid Lo Bayis. And it has to be Yichid Lo Bayis, lo kibbol av. He wasn't Mekabel Achrayus. Mekabel Achrayus, it's no good. Even if he was Miyachid Lo Bayis. See, he can't be Mekabel Achrayus, A. And B, he also has to be Miyachid Lo Bayis. He also has to set aside a special place for the guy to place the chametz. Otherwise, it's no good. Because now it's Birshus in the Jew's domain with permission. A goy's chametz in the Jew's domain without permission is no good. It's aser. So when the Gemara says this miut of first of all it's yichid lo bayis that he set aside a place, but that's not enough. We also have to come on to the fact. First, the Gemara says you have to come on to the fact that tzchiras kanya. And then the Gemara says, okay, it's not because Tzchiras Kanya, it's because Zeno Matsu Biyatcha. If it's Miyachid Lo Bayis, then it's Eino Matsu Biyatcha. Then it's considered, it's a miut of Bal Yimatzeh, but it's not considered for the Jew's usage. It's not considered available to him, because now it's the Goy's. It's the Goy's in the Goy's special place. So the miut of Yichid Lo Bayis is not like Tosis learns. Tosus learns that if he's miyachid lo bayis, then it's like he's makabel achrayis on the chomitz of the goy in the house of a goy. That's not how Rashi learns. Rashi learns that yichid lo bayis is okay because it's not matzui biyado. Because he's miyachid bayis la'akum. So it comes out according to Rashi that as long as he didn't give the goy rishus, everything is fine. And the only problem begins if the guy brings chametz into his house with rishus. The problem with this is that the Gemara earlier asked the stira. On one hand it says that you're not allowed to accept pikdonis from goyim. On the other hand it says, M'shalchai Torah tal rosh alacheirim. You're allowed to receive pikdonis from goyim. So what's the Gemara's kasha? You're allowed to receive pikdonis. M'shalchai Torah tal rosh alacheirim. It's without rishus. Meaning you're allowed to be you're not allowed to be makabel pikdonis menachrim with rishus. You give them rishus to give to bring the chametz into your house. And when ataroa shalachayim is talking about without rishus. So if this pshat is correct in Rashi, then why does the Gemara have a kasha between the two sources, between the, in the Brice is a stira. And one, you're not allowed to be makabel b'kdonis menachem, and the other end, you're allowed to see the chometz of a goy. Very simple resolution. You're allowed to be have the chometz of a goy when it's without rishus, and you're not allowed to be makabel b'kdonis chometz with rishus. But I'll call upon him. That's a kasha on this mahalach, but based on what we said, that's Rashi's. The reason we had to come on to the whole heter in the end of the Gemara of Matzah, the reason Kanya and Lo Kanya and Matzah Biyadcha, is because we need to find a heter for Yichid Lo Bais. Yichid Lo Bais is a problem because he has rishus to bring in the chomet. Yichid Lo Bais isn't enough. So the Gemara has to say in the end, no, it's not considered Matzah Biyadcha, and therefore Yichid Lo Bais is okay. Only because it's not considered Matzah Biyadcha. But if it would be Matzah Biyadcha, it wouldn't be okay. Even if it's the chomet of a goy, because he brought it in Birishus. And Rashi says, Lo kiblu alav, it means he wasn't makabel achrayis. He says, makabel achrayis, yichid lo bayis doesn't help. Yichid lo bayis is only okay, provided that he wasn't makabel achrayis. And memela, it's an eno matzu biyada. So there are two ways that goyis chomis is allowed to enter his house, either without rishus, or with rishus if it's miyachid lo bayis, and he wasn't makabel achrayis. So, יש הרבה מה לדבר על זה, אבל זה just a little bit of a snippet of Torah, בשם הרב, and now I'd like to share a beautiful little narrative told by Dr. Yitzchak David Goldberg, who's the director and chairman emeritus of the Angian Biomedica Corporation and a professor emeritus at Albert Einstein College of Medicine, which I don't know much about him, but he said he's a really, really smart person. In any event, so he tells a beautiful story over here about the Bala Yurt site. And they were walking and talking, the famous story with Elisha, accompanying his mentor, Elio, on his last earthly walk in Malachim Beis, Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. So relates Dr. Goldberg, the walk from our home into the Maimonides schools in Brookline, Massachusetts should typically take 20 minutes. Often I wanted it to last for an eternity. It is an early spring afternoon at 109 Colborne Crescent in Brookline. Noses pressed against the window panes are young children. Alicia, Irit, and Shlomit are watching for a glimpse of the Rav, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, to appear. As he turns the corner into our street on his way from his Addington Road home to the Maimonides school, they shout, bouncing on the couch, "The Rav is coming! The Rav is coming!" Our young family moved into the small Orthodox community in Brookline, Massachusetts in the summer of 1977, living a mere few houses from Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. Zatzal afforded us an unparalleled opportunity to interact with one of the greatest rabbinic intellectual giants of the 20th century. Sporting a dark blue suit and dark straw hat, the Rav is accompanied by David, a young, energetic, and tenured professor of mathematics at Harvard. A child prodigy, David is a recent emigre from the Soviet Union who received no formal Jewish education. Although rooted in an atheistic elite Moscow academic circle, David nevertheless lived the Maimonidean principle formulated in the Mor Nevuchim. Truth does not become more true by virtue of the fact that the entire world agrees with it, nor less so even if the whole world disagrees with it. Great line. Son of world-renowned Byzantine Empire historian, David discovered his Jewish roots and Jewish religion while in his early 20s. Within a few years, he masters the Hebrew language and was immersed in the study of Tanakh and Gemara. In the early 1970s, David was invited by Harvard to join its math faculty. This was the first time David was a member of an organized Jewish community which afforded him close access to a Torah giant. David never missed an opportunity to take advantage of this singular good fortune. The Rav in turn marveled at this Lamdin who emerged phoenix-like from Soviet desolation. In the Kutei Torah, Chabad Alter Rebbe describes the unique closeness between God and the Jewish people during Ella with the following mashal. Before a king enters one of the cities, its inhabitants are enjoined to go out to greet him and receive him with praise and thanksgiving. At that time, anyone who desires is granted permission to approach him. He receives them all pleasantly and shines his smiling countenance on all. This intimate encounter is not possible when the king is in his palace, where formality and royal protocol preclude the king's direct interaction with average citizens. In his capacity as a Rosh Yeshiva, which university in New York City, the Rav was mostly accessible to his students, to a select group of leaders in the greater Jewish community. On the weekends, however, at his home in Brookline, the Rav was approachable by all members of his community. Many Kailat on Shabbos with the opportunity to accompany the Rav on his walk to and from the Maimonides School Synagogue. I rushed down the 22 wide cement stairs leading from our two-family brownwood frame home to join the Rav and David. They are engaged in intense dialogue. In his work, I wonder what language, probably in Russian. In his work, Halachic Man, the Rav highlights the intellectual effort as the hallmark of the ideal religious personality. He equates the theoretical norms of halacha with those of mathematics. Both disciplines develop abstract constructs, which are then applied and translated into the physical world. Both the halachist and the mathematician live in an ideal realm and enjoy the radiance of their own creations, he writes. We walk past century-old, expansive New England clapboard homes, which are intermixed with smaller modern brick ranches into the terraced hills, surrounded by plentiful foliage and old wooden fences. Wow, for an MD who really knows how to describe a scene. We make our way down the sloping road, turning left onto Rawson Road, and reach the steps to Rawson Path. Rawson Path is narrow and the stone steps are uneven. Tree branches provide dense shade with a few lingering rays of light, penetrating here and there as a bevy of birds chirp a beautiful spring melody. A thought flits through my mind. The name Soloveitchik means nightingale, a singing bird in Russian. We proceed slowly and cautiously. Reaching Gardner Road, we are joined by Elazar, a young, inquisitive, and brilliant Maimonides School graduate enrolled in a Harvard MIT MD PhD program. Whoa. And by Shlomo, a local real estate construction entrepreneur, a major supporter of the Maimonides School. We turn left onto Tappan Street. We curve to the right where it meets Blake and Sumner Roads. Avram joins our small but growing assembly. He's a tall, elegant, successful businessman in his late 40s, a nephew of Moshe Feinstein, and a relative and close friend of the Rav. A bit further down, Yosef catches up to us. He is an unassuming graduate of Boston Latin, which, parenthetically, my father-in-law was a graduate of Boston Latin. And then he went to Harvard and then became a doctor in, all places, Kiryat Moshe, with an unmistakable Boston drawl. And son of the venerable rabbi who, as head of the Chevra Shas, invited the Rav to move to Boston in the early 1930s. And now Shraga is in sight, trudging his way downhill towards our group. A clean-shaven Gera Chassid. Clean-shaven Gera Chassid? It's mamash a self-contradictory statement. A clean-shaven Gera Chassid and Lower East Side transplant, Shraga is an ebullient, outspoken insurance business executive and senior member of the Shabbos Kiddush Club. I assume the Kiddush Club wasn't during Kriya Satoira, Kiminhag, some places, which occasionally hosted the Rav. Yoshua, public high school teacher with an extensive knowledge of the Rambana Latoira, follows him. Chaim, an ambitious young real estate construction executive, formerly of Pelham Parkway in the Bronx, is rushing down Blake Road with his young son Ellie to catch up with the Chabura. The tree-lined intersecting streets of the small bucolic neighborhood are becoming dotted with more and more individuals who are emerging from their private homes and briskly latching on to this unique entourage accompanying the Rav on his way to Mincha. The prayerful charity community rises to a higher sense of communion in the teaching community, where teacher and disciple are fully united. Wow, that's something the Rav wrote, I think. Nissen, a silver-haired Boston native and farmer, emerges from his home at the corner of Sumner and Tappan and quickly falls in step. Yehudis, a beloved teenage, learning-disabled member of the community, daughter of Shraga and niece of Nissen, is running quickly to catch up with the growing group. As she reaches the Rav, she gently takes hold of his hand, which he clasps in his own. To recognize a person, he writes, it's not just to identify him physically. It is more than that. It is an act of identifying him existentially as a person who has a job to do that only he can do properly. To recognize a person means to affirm that he is irreplaceable. To hurt a person means to tell him that he is expendable. There is no need for him. It is not enough to feel the pain of many, nor is it sufficient to pray for the many. If this does not lead to charitable action, a responsible member of Knesset Yisrael must be spiritually awake, must be concerned with others, must work to help those in need. Wow, powerful. The conversation intensifies. David, the mathematician, is still on the Rav's right, and Yehudis on the left is now firmly grasping the Rav's hand. Genius on the right, loving kindness on the left, flashes through my mind. Our communal walk has morphed into an integrally harmonious rainbow of Reb Chaim Britzkir Toiro, Chaslavich Chabad Hasidic Neshama, Vignettes, University of Berlin, Kant, Hermann Cohen, Maimonidean Logic with a mix of Einstein, the Minchas Chinuch, and the Shagas Aryeh theoretical constructs. We traverse the overpass above the Green Line cable car as it makes its way west. We cross paths with a noisy group of Brookline High School students wearing Boston Celtics emerald green t-shirts and hear snippets of Larry Bird's latest miraculous jump shot under the boards. I must say this is describing 1979. I think Bird only started playing, from what I checked, in 1970. This is 77. I think Bird only started playing in 79. But you know what? There were other great Celtic players. Whoever they were describing some Boston Celtic game. And Larry Bird won't be offended that they weren't talking about him as a Celtic before he actually joined the team. An MIT doctor of material science, an MGH-trained infectious diseases specialist, and an oil wholesale distributor join us as we approach Clark Road. The latter holds a sheet of paper with a list of questions he plans to ask the Chov during the open question session between Mincha and Ma'ariv. Crossing Clark Road, we are joined by several members of yet another illustrious Boston real estate family, famed for their cantorial talent. We start climbing Sumner Road. A flock of birds returning from their winter refuge in the south seem to be accompanying our equally wondrous late afternoon journey. Writes the Rav, Judaism has stressed the wholeness and unity of Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish community. The latter is not a conglomerate. It is an autonomous entity endowed with a life of its own. However strange such a concept may appear to the empirical sociologist, it is not at all a strange experience for the halachist and mystic, to whom Knesset Yisrael is a living, loving, and suffering mother. We are on the last stretch, turning into the Philbrick Road. We are now a full entourage of eager adherents accompanying our master teacher as we stride adjacent to the curved white wall, capped with red shingles, that surrounds the Maimonidean campus. Shlomo, tall, bearded, and sporting his beret, chairman of Harvard University's math department, is followed by Yosef, a textile industry businessman, and Chaim, the dentist, all of whom are heading down Buckminster Road. A gentle eastward wind is blowing. The birds disappear over the large water reservoir on Route 9. As we approach the school, the Rav speaks about our forefather Avram. And lo, a dread, even a great darkness fell upon him. And he said unto Avram, know of a certainty, that your seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs. And Avram asked, whereby will I know that the time is right for me to take possession of Eretz Yisrael? And God answered, take a heifer, a goat, a ram, a pigeon, and a turtle dove. These animals represent the entire spectrum of species from which one can bring a korban. And God divided them in the midst and laid them against the others, but the bird he divided not. I think actually it was Avram who divided them, not Hashem. But he divided them in the midst and laid each against the others, but the bird he divided not. Why was the bird not divided? The bird has the ability to soar high into endless space and epitomizes the Jewish spirit, which has never been defeated. We enter the school. I turn left to retrieve my sitter from the locker room and then open the wide oak door leading to the sanctuary. The Rav is no more. The small brick-based medrash is gone. A new modern shul has replaced it. The Rav's chair has disappeared. His shtender stands orphaned. Its weathered dark wood is in stark contrast to the new, shiny, honey-colored modern pews. The frayed crimson velvet cover with the initials of JBS still gently envelops the top of the shtender. Hesitatingly, I pull the shtender's door latch open. The Rav sitter is still there. Our scintilla of heaven on earth has left us. We are bereft. I return home. Our babies have grown up and born their own babies. With whom will their children walk? Postscript. 30 years after the passing of the Rav, many of the older congregants participating in this magical voyage are no longer with us. Most of the younger ones have left the Maimonides community. David, the young mathematician, became the chair of mathematics at Harvard, a member of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, and a recipient of the prestigious MacArthur Fellowship. David subsequently moved with his family to Eretz Yisrael, where he received the Israel Prize and was the first Israeli to receive the Shoah International Prize. Elazar remained in the Maimonides community, became a renowned cardiologist at Harvard, and has been making seminal contributions to the field of vascular research, vascular stents, and clinical cardiology. Chaim became a successful real estate developer, a Maimonides board member, and managed the construction of the new Maimonides building on Clark Road. His young son Eli, who is now a grandfather, moved to Alon Shvut, and like his father, is a successful real estate developer. Chaim the dentist moved to Florida, and there led the establishment of a new flourishing firm community. Yehudis lives in Brooklyn and is doing well. The birds still return to Rawson Path and make their way to the reservoir every single spring. When the Rav's brother, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, eulogized the Rav at the funeral 31 years ago, he shared the following observation. It was on Shabbos after the Rav's passing and the day before the funeral. Rav Aaron visited the home of Rav Isidore Twersky, Yitzchak Twersky, and his wife, the Rav's daughter, Atara. The Rav was lying on the floor covered with a talus. Every 30 minutes, Atara got up and gazed at the talus-covered body. "I am 75 years old," said Rav Aaron, "but I have never seen a daughter looking at her father whose eyes she could not see with such deep love and affection. I have seen mothers looking at their children with expressions of love, but I have never seen a daughter expressing such emotions for her father." I want to add parenthetically that if you listen to the Hesped, it's available online, of Rav Meir Twersky, Shlita of his mother, Rebbetzin Twersky, who's being described over here. He talks about how she was so wholly and completely dedicated to her father for so many years. It is just, I don't even have words. Incredible, mind-boggling, moving, tear-jerking, uplifting, very, very special. Atara, together with her husband, Rabbi Professor Isidore Twersky, the Tolna Rebbe, took care of the ailing Rav in their home with much love and heroic dedication for decades. Several weeks ago, our youngest son, Yosef, who never met the Rav, but has heard about our Kamalot years with the Rav and his Brookline community, pinged our family chat that he is in Brookline on a business trip and now has a free hour. Where should he go? He decided to walk around the reservoir, where he ran into jogging young Maimonides students on a school break. As the Rav writes, the Mesorah community cuts across the centuries and unites those who already played their part with those who have not as yet been given the opportunity to appear on the covenantal stage. Just wow, what do we say? You know, there's so much to say about Rav Soloveitchik, and so much already has been said. But I just want to conclude with one thought that I've been feeling very strongly as I think about it. And that is that it's incredible how HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent this unique individual who had an almost unparalleled mastery of Torah in breadth and in depth. Almost nobody like him. And certainly nobody exactly like him. But almost nobody in his league. And his secular knowledge, his understanding of mathematics and philosophy and science and history, also almost nobody in his league. And to have somebody who has both, and somebody who's so deeply rooted in Brisk and in Europe and in Mesorah and in Reb Chaim and in Torah and in Yerushalayim, you hear when he speaks how the Yerushalayim comes through and his strong connection even with all of his secular knowledge and all of his intellectual power and force, yet he was still so deeply rooted in Yahadis and in Torah and in Avodas Hashem and in Yerushalayim. And had he not been sent to America, who would have been able to do what he did? And you combine that with his tremendous charisma, just to the prophetic personality that he was, how he drew people to him. You have these Americans who are secularly educated, they're part of the general world. And then these Rabbanim come over from Europe and they only speak Yiddish. And they can't connect to the new generation. And a lot of people went off the derech. They didn't have it. Not like today. Today you have in every high school in America, you have young cool rabbeim. They're also American. They also grew up in America, and they understand the mentality. And not only do they understand the mentality, it's the same mentality. And they can talk to the boys about sports and about popular culture and connect them with their problems and their life. But back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, who did you have? So all these intellectuals would have nobody to talk to. Because the Rabbanim are great. They're incredible. They don't like anything. No chesrons to talk of. But they wouldn't be able to connect to these people because these young people especially, they don't have the Torah knowledge that these great Rabbanim have. And the great Rabbanim don't have the secular knowledge. They're not connected to the world. Comes the Soloveitchik, and he has both. So on one hand, they can connect him because he knows everything they know about secular matters. I mean, obviously, he doesn't know everything, but it's not too much to know. But you know, he's on such a high level of knowledge and understanding in so many different areas of secular wisdom. So nobody's going to be a greater intellectual than he is, and in perfect, beautiful English better than Americans, right? And perfect, beautiful Yiddish. And I think he also knew modern Hebrew. So he can literally speak their language and figuratively speak their language. And at the same time, also be a master of Torah, not like, you know, a guy who's, you know, a rabbi doctor who's more a doctor than a rabbi, right? He's a PhD, he's a scholar, he's an intellectual. And on the side, he's a bright guy, so, you know, he said a little Yoruday, a little Chashavs, he got Smicha. But that doesn't make the cut, that doesn't do it. You know, Mamash a Godel of Torah, who's a Godel of Mada, a Godel in this world, in matters relating to the secular wisdom and sciences, and at the same time to be somebody so charismatic, and somebody who's such deeply rooted Yerushalayim, and then to say such Chidushei Torah, such sweet Chidushei Torah. And it's not only then, it's today. And there's so many people that, it's not nice to say, I don't know how far they'd be if not from Soloveitchik. But they look up so they say, somebody like that is a fringe. That's who I want to be like. That's my hero. I mean, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people like that. And you know, you go to any minor Orthodox high school, every single Rebbe is Mitalmid Talmidav. You know, they're all everyone, just about. So and the boys were so attracted to me, you know, they're the greater band in YU. They're actually good, they're all in YU. For Relic and Ruff Volk and Ruf, all these great Borenstein, really Mamish Gedolel, but Rav Lifshitz, Yosef Weiss, tremendous people, tremendous personalities, tremendous human beings, tremendous tzaddikim, tremendous Talmid Chachamim, Yaakov Levitch, all these people, great people. But the goal was always, you know, to get into the law share. God, I learned the law for this and this amount of time. That was like that was where everybody wanted to go. And to this day, you see who's non-stop quoted. Non-stop quoted is halakhic positions, is philosophical positions, is shkafic positions, is longest. And so many people, they wouldn't have been able to connect. And they would say, oh, Judaism, for what isn't for me. That's for Europe, that's for the olden days. But I said, no, look at me. I went to the University of Berlin. I have a PhD. I know 1,000, 10,000 more big words than you know. And not only that, I even know what they mean. I can spell them, I can say them, and I know what they mean. I read all the books. Look at his footnote. And halach, the footnote is halach of mine, and halach of man. He's everywhere. And so obviously nobody fully understands him because nobody's on his level in secular wisdom and philosophy and science and math and learning either. Right? We're not as much Jericho. But the fact that so many people see such a giant, he's a tremendously firm Jew. It's not like, you know, Soloveitchik didn't, you know, he's like one of these people who wasn't serious about halacha, yeah, don't worry about it. It's okay, they don't take it too seriously. And he had all brisker chorus, very, very serious about Yiddishkeit. And he wasn't exclusively, an Orthodox for centuries. There's a picture of a check that he gave to the Lakewood Yeshiva, the base manager, Shagol. He wanted Lakewood to be a big check. He wanted Lakewood to be successful also. He wanted it to be taught in America. He wanted the serve to continue. That was what he felt in his kishkes. You know, Kant wasn't in his kishkes. And Herman Cohen wasn't in his kishkes. I don't think so. I never met him. But the passion that he has when talking about the Messiah, I don't think he had the same passion for Sefer. Not that he didn't know. I'm not taking the position now that the left wing coming to the road, the middle of the century, is the right wing. I'm not there, and I don't know, and I never met him, and it really doesn't matter to me. What matters is that, to me anyway, is that he was a makar of thousands of people who now have thousands and tens of thousands of children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. And it just continues all because of him. And to this day, not only in Chutzlaret, in Eretz Yisrael also, because there's salvation, and they learn called the Deal Fake, and they learn this article and that article. And it's the leader like that, somebody who everybody listened to. The Rav said, that's it, the Rav said. There's nobody like that anymore. And that's really what the world is missing. Say, Hesed is Melch and Hesed, what we lost. So, you know, I'll let him be Masid in Nissan. Also be master in Nisa. Certainly not in Chol Moed Pesach. But it's to appreciate a Godel, to connect to a Godel, pointed now to be master because it's sad. But to have service from this tremendous, what the bracha, the Karas HaTov, we have to the Rosh Hashanah, that he used the love to save American Jewry. It's not that there wouldn't be anybody for it. There would still be Satmar and there'd still be Lakewood. They would still, but we're talking about, you know, tens of thousands of people who use Mashiach. And it's just more, you know, every day they have a website, maybe you heard of Hawaii Torah. And every day thousands of people are visiting. And the rule is, it's just all because of that. Well, he was YU, and I have all the tools that were given by Rabbi Moore. Either it was Tommy Eden or Tommy Eden, Tommy Eden. So, Tommy Eden, Tommy Eden, Tommy Eden, Tommy Eden. And children of people are Rabbi, grandchildren of people are Rabbi. And I personally, I came to NTA right after he left, right after he retired due to his illness. But 1984. But my grandfather, Zichron Levracha, he was one of the founders of the Maria Shul in the West Side, on 80th and Broadway, 80th and 81st. And the Rav was the rabbi there. He used to give shiur there. My grandfather used to go. My father went sometimes. So I can't say I was mushpa from that so much. I didn't know my grandfather. He passed away when I was a baby. But the hashpah was everywhere. The Balabatim loved him. The rich Balabatim loved him. The poor Balabatim loved him. The intellectuals loved him. The Lamadan loved him. Everybody found the Rav to love. And you know, unfortunately, we don't have that anymore. We don't have people who are great rabbanim from Eastern Europe. Even see, learn Igros HaGrid. We've had a number of shiur that I gave based on the Sefer Igros HaGrid. Just letters he wrote and saying, we're talking about a teenage boy, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old boy. He's writing tradition like he's a Rosh Hashiva, like he's a big Rosh Hashiva in B'nai Brak. Shmuel Wazowski, the great Gaon, the Panovich Rosh Hashiva, came to Boston, Nebuch. He was very, very sick with cancer, Nebuch. Barminan, Lolein. So he went to speak at the Love and Learning. And they have a center for cancer treatment in Boston. He's there, obviously, to speak to Love, Salvation, and Learning, the two of them. So Rav Moshe Shapiro was also in America at the time. Rabbi Rabbi, finally got Rav Moshe Shapiro. So he says he regretted that he didn't... He wasn't there when the two of them were speaking and learning. He would have loved to hear the conversation. Hearing Rav Shmuel, the Talmud of Rav Shimon Shkop, and Rav Soloveitchik, Talmud of Rav Moshe, and his grandfather, Chaim, these two titans, talking and learning on a tremendously high level of learning that they reach on, And again, it isn't only the level of learning. See, he's a genius, absolutely genius. His love is Torah, his passion for Torah. It's something to truly something to behold. And Baruch Hashem, you can go online today. You can hear tapes of him speaking. You can hear it from his mouth. And all the books being written. Very beautiful. Very, very beautiful. I have Sefer Naros Sarav by Rabbi Schreiber from the Five Towns. It used to be online. It used to be a website. You put all the books online. Now the website is, last I checked, it was gone. But in English, he just writes down, he transcribes the Rav lectures in English. Beautiful, beautiful Torah. And it's so thought-provoking. So thought-provoking. Really something very, very special. I think that he saved Yiddishkeit in America. You know, it's great, and CSY, and all these important things. But that there should be so many, you know, Shomri Shabbos, Shomri Kashrus, Shomri Taras Mishpacha, people who send their children to UT Yeshiva day school. I don't know if there was anybody below Zikl who has a schus like that, but putting aside is all of his other minds. Just the fact that he helped save American Jewry. So obviously that doesn't mean that necessarily every Rav agrees with every Shita of his, and he never made mistakes in life. Obviously it's not for me to say who made mistakes and who's right and who's wrong. It's not beyond my pay grade, they say today. But to appreciate it, it says the Gemara, a person is atzel v'espedu shalchach and really kov v'chaim. And if a person lax in appreciating the loss of the gadol, being master of the gadol, should be buried alive. See what the NAA explains that. There was an article written by Professor David Tamar, son of Rabbi Yisachar, who wrote a famous parish in the Yerushalmi, Ali Tamar. So he was saying how certain circles, they don't appreciate great Rabban when they die because they're not a member of their chug, of their community. So there's a great Rav named Rav Shulam Rotz, who the Chabina Rav held Rav Shulam Rotz. Oylam Aloya, he held that Rav Shulam Rotz was Mam Shagana Gana Gainim. Chabina Rav's expression was, and the Chabina Rav was a Gan Goyen, who was his son of Torah. The Chabina Rav said about Rav Shulam Rot, Goy ke'echot mikamai. So, Rav Aaron Kotler was Nifter in 1963, Kislev. So, maybe it was still 62, right before 63. So, there's a certain newspaper that had a whole first page for a whole week. It was talking about Aaron Cutler and Levaya and other things, greatness. And Rav Shulam Rot was also Nifter. And he just got a few lines, and that was it. Why? Because he was a chosid. He was a Gan Goyim. But he was a member of the wrong group. And he wrote one shiva, and his sefer, you can learn the sefer, Kol Vaster, they republished it. Wow. And he wrote a shiva about Nasi, the Nasi of Medina Yisrael, the Medina of Nasi, and the Gemara. The people, they didn't like that. Once he wrote that shiva, he was out. But he must have been from Shulam Rot. So the Rav also, he was nifter, not... Bevadai, bevadai, l'nispat ka'alocha, l'nispat ka'alocha. So I hope that we're able to follow in his derech. To see, it's not a stira, it's not a stira. To be knowledgeable in worldly matters, and at the same time be a Gan Goyim, be a Maariv Torah, be an Oyev Torah, be a Mamin, be a Maseiros Yisrael, like the great Goyim, like many of the great Tzaddikim and geniuses that we've had in Klal Yisrael, who, when it came to learning, they were intellectual giants, they were things. And when it came to Amunah, they were like little children, like five-year-old children with Amunah Peshuta. Not an Amunah Pashtanit. With all the philosophy and after all said and done, just Amunah Peshuta. Tzadik Hashem b'chol derocha b'chasi b'chol ma'asav. Avos Hashem, yours Hashem. That's, I think, something we can all take with us. And I hope I take a little bit for myself also. I can certainly use it. And we should be zechem mitzvah b'karv to the chiyus ha'maisim. So I hope that we're able to have more shiurim from the chod yirtzai from the lost Torah, and also talk more about him, because it's just so important to our memory. Thank you so much for listening, sweet friends. Shalom, shalom.